Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership. Let's
go. And I'm feeling great.
I'm doing great.
Happy Monday to you, boys and girls. One question only. How do you feel?
Well, I feel good, and I'm doing well.
That's all that really matters. We come to you live for the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studio. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. And our toll-free line today, 855-212-4227, as we break down week number two of the NFL, brought to you by Geico. Great news. Quick way you could save money switching to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Our next guest played eight seasons in the NFL, including a Pro Bowl year with an 80-pass season for nearly 1,300 yards and 16 scores in 07. He was the number three pick in the NFL draft, played for the Browns, the Jets, the Niners, and the Seahawks in his NFL career. He's also the only wide receiver in Big Ten history with 1,000 yards receiving in three consecutive seasons, and at Michigan had an unbelievable collegiate career. Joining us, as he has written a new book called Doing It My Way, Braylon Edwards in studio. Braylon, good morning, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you dropping on by, man.
And here we are.
Yeah, today we've talked a lot about Antonio Brown's debut with the New England Patriots. Do you think that Antonio Brown knew he would become a Patriot as he kind of shot his way out of town in Oakland?
That's a tough one. I personally would say no. I don't think it was one of those things where he had this plan the whole way. It was like under the cover type of rap deal that he was going to do all these weird, quirky things to eventually get let go. And then once he got let go, end up in New England with his boy, his new best friend, Tom Brady. I don't think so. I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't.
When you look at AB yesterday, four catches, 56 yards, a touchdown, hugging Tom Brady, do you think that this thing has legs? Can it last the entire season with AB, you know, playing nice and playing within that organization?
I just think you look at what happens when people go up there to New England, when they get around Belichick, when they get around Brady. People had a lot of things to say about Randy Moss when he was leaving the Raiders. Look what happened when he got there. People had a lot of things to say about Josh Gordon, and they still do. The verdict's not out. But no, but everything is positive as it comes from Belichick about Josh Gordon, as it comes from Brady. I think they just have a way of doing it. And I don't think it's over-the-top disciplinary in action. I think they just put a system in play in which you just can look at the model and see it's successful. Like, hey, you can have your individual success, but if you do this thing the right way, you'll get a ring. You'll get the respect that you want and that you need and you deserve if you do it right. And also, you can finish the right way. A lot of times people do extremely well when they finish in New England because they have that reputation that they did it the right way. So I think it has more than legs. I do. I think it has arms, a head, and torso.
You know, you were a guy that was a wide receiver, and you heard tons of criticism over the course of your career. Selfish, me guy, et cetera. Right. When you hear that about Antonio Brown, what do you think?
I think it just depends on, like, certain things I can understand where fans come from. Certain times I think you have to take a step back and then look what a guy does. I don't think AB is any more selfish than any other receiver or any other player that wants to win. I just think when you play wide receiver, this is what I've always said, is you're on an island. Like, everyone gets a chance to see everything you do all game, from running routes to catching passes. Like, it's you. It's you out there fighting. You're the only position where you can be open all game long, and it takes everything to be right for it to work. So that can be frustrating a lot of times for a player. You go out there, and you're open, you know, 65 plays, and then they throw one pass your way, and you drop it, and now everybody's going crazy. What about the other 65 plays that you didn't see where I destroyed my man, I blocked him well, I did things? So I think that feeds into a lot of times the characteristics or the personalities that we have. You know, a lot of times running is different. You can be a good running back with a bad offensive line. Barry Sanders proved that. I mean, he was great. You know, you can be a bad offensive line, but you can get picked up by the left guard if you're a left tackle, and vice versa with the center. Like, you need everything to work as a wide receiver for it to work. Line has to block. Quarterback has to see the blitz, has to call it out. Running back has to pick up the blitz. Other receivers have to run their routes the right way so that you can get open. So it's just an interesting position on the field.
Braylon Edwards joins us this morning on the show. In your book, I mean, you address the criticism that you got over the course of your career and names that you were called and stigmas or reputations that you had. When you look back at it, do you wish you had handled things a different way, or do you just have a different perspective now, having now been out of the game?
More so just a different perspective. You know, I don't think I would have handled anything any differently, to be honest. I think I actually would have said more in terms of a lot of times when you deal with situations, you know, media wants you to be a certain way. They want to protect the brand of the team, which I did too. But in doing so, a lot of times you don't get to tell what's going on. Or you don't get to give an honest assessment of what you see so that they can hear it out of you. They get what the media tells them, and then, well, what we tell them now, because I'm on the other side of the table, what we tell them, and that's it, as opposed to being able to, you know what, this was what going on in this situation. This is how I feel, regardless of anything else. So the book is called Doing It My Way. I feel like I did it my way, and I don't have any regrets. I mean,
what would you have said at the time if you knew what you knew now? What do you feel like you kind of held back on?
I'll give you an example. So when I got traded from the Browns to the Jets, which was the best move of my life, I'm very happy to Eric Mangini. But Eric Mangini wasn't doing so well with the team in terms of winning over the players, in terms of getting that start, a decent start. I think we started off 0-3. And then I was traded. But after the second loss, he had a meeting because he didn't believe players were on board. Players were trying to jump ship. Players weren't in agreement with his policies and his rules. He had a team meeting, and he said, hey, if any player wants to be moved or doesn't want to buy into the system, after this team meeting, come upstairs, talk to me, and we'll do our best to get you moved, to get you moved. Fast forward, after game three, that evening and that Sunday night, that's the incident I got into with LeBron James' friend, Eddie Givens. He and I got into a fight, an altercation outside of Cleveland nightclub. Him and his boys tried to jump me, and it's going to be me or them. I'm by myself, and I stood my ground. I just happened to win and play ball. So fast forward, then when I get traded that Wednesday morning, that following Wednesday morning, it seemed as though I got traded because I got into a fight. And then the fight comes out. I was like, Braylon's a high head. He's a troublemaker. He's a distraction to the team. So, you know, and I never said anything. I was the first person to go talk to Eric Mangini after that meeting, 2 weeks prior to that fight. And I was very respectful. I said, hey, I've been here for 4 years. This will be four. This is going on five that season. I just don't think this is a winning environment. I said, I don't have anything against you. I've just been here long enough. If you could, I would like to, you know, you look around, see if you could do something for me and move me. Me and my agent would like to, you officially a shopper. He said, okay, get back to you. Fast forward, I got traded, and everybody was like, oh, he got traded because he's a distraction. He got traded because he got into a fight. I talked to Eric Mangini 2 weeks before that fight. Little stuff like that is what I wish I could have said, because when I went to New York, I was so happy to get out in Cleveland that I didn't say anything to the press. Like, I never even talked about the fight. Every time they talked to me, hey, it's a legal matter. It's ongoing. You know, I'm just happy to be a Jet. I'm here to do it the right way. What I wish I would have said was I went to personally to talk to Eric Mangini after a team meeting in which he asked if any player wanted to jump off the ship, if you will. And 2 weeks later, it just bad timing. But that's one of the things I wish I would have done is say that.
So you're in Cleveland, and LeBron James's friends.
Friend of a friend, to be honest. Not even LeBron's boy, but yes.
Multiple guys jump you?
Yes, four. Well, they tried.
Four of them.
Yeah.
And you were able to hold your ground of four guys.
I knocked two out, and then the other two kind of backed up. And then an officer that's usually out there every Sunday night, who I know was like, Braylon, get out of here, go home. Like, you know, just making sure I didn't, you know, get in trouble. So I jumped in my car, and I went home. That was it. Left early, too. It wasn't even like a 2 o'clock deal. It was around like 11:15. So I left to go home, but because I'm an athlete, because I'm a big name, it didn't matter that I was getting jumped. What matters is I won the fight. I am an athlete, so they automatically assume that we're stronger than everybody, and you know, it's a bad look.
You're a star player in right. Cleveland at that time when LeBron's a star player in Cleveland, his right. first tour. Did you ever talk to him about this?
He and I were friends, leading up to this, and I feel like the way in which it came about, it just wasn't handled the right way, and then it caused some friction because he and I were friends. We would not necessarily go out together, but when we would see each other out at restaurants, we'd be, hey, how you doing? You know, I'd pay for his tab sometimes, even though he didn't need it. You know, he paid for mine, et cetera. Buy him a drink, say hi to his wife, Savannah. Like, Eddie, I know his stepfather, et cetera. We were friends. So when this happened, I feel like neither one of us got a chance to talk to the other party. Because I remember him getting interviewed the day I got traded. And I remember him, he's like, I don't know what Braylon was doing, like fighting Eddie. He's like fighting one of my kids or something, he said. And he's always been jealous of me. And I just don't understand where that came from. I feel like he got put on the spot. And maybe that's the first thing that came up. Because you got to remember, he's still young at this time. This is 09. This is 10 years ago. LeBron's, what, 34 now? So yeah. he's still only.
Yeah, mid-20s.
Yeah, exactly. So he's still 20s. Young. And you handle things differently when you, trust me, I know. So I never was mad at him. I just never really got the chance to, hey, this is what happened. Edward Givens and I have even had conversations, and we moved past that and became friends. Not friends, but we're social mm-hmm. when I see him out. So it's funny that year, when they tried to jump me, Monty Ball went back to Monty Ball, the Wisconsin running back, who got drafted by the Vikings, I want to say. He went back to Madison that year and got jumped, but he got beat up. And so it wasn't a big deal. There were no arrests. Everything was cool because he got beat up. Now, had Monty Ball won that fight, Monty Ball would have gotten in trouble. It would have been different. So it's different.
Mm. Yeah. Braylon Edwards joins us this morning on the show. So you get drafted by the Browns, as you said, losing culture. They were losers before that. They've been losers after that. Maybe they're turning it around right now. You ask for a trade. How dysfunctional, how bad was it when you got to Cleveland?
It was tough, man. I just to give you an inkling. In 4 years, I played with 17 quarterbacks.
17 in four years?
Four offensive coordinators. And, or was it five offensive coordinators? Five offensive coordinators, three head coaches. Two. Because Romeo did stay on for 4 years, and then Eric Mangini. But that was just in 4 years of being there, man. It's like at every turn something happened. Like my rookie year, trying to get it going. Then we had the huge staff outbreak where everyone kept getting staff. Like Joe Giravich ended up suing the Browns. They had a private settlement out of court. I caught staff infection. A couple other guys caught staff infection. That was once Kellen Winslow caught staff infection. I don't know. Man. They say mistake by the late. I didn't believe in that, but bad things happen in Cleveland. And for the football organization, it was tough.
Ownership problem? Does that stem there?
So what I heard when I was there is Randy Lerner was the owner. But Randy Lerner inherited the team from his father, Al Lerner, who had passed away. Randy Lerner was into the credit card business, in the banking business. And he was very, very interested in soccer. He owned a soccer team as well. He spent the majority of his time, in that realm. So it kind of was... He owned the Browns, but that wasn't where his focus was. And I think a lot of that played into Phil Savage, the GM, taking on the owner's role, but not necessarily, making the best decisions, et cetera. So in order to win, as you watch TV, you see these owners in the league. Which owners win? The owners that are sleeves rolled up, they're at the practices, they're in the meetings, they're in the meetings in terms of which players are coming in, which players are not coming in, how much money is going on, how much money is staying in. We need this guy. All right, do you really need that guy? Yes, we do. We're going to go ahead and get you that guy. Those are the teams that win.
Right, the engaged owners, yeah. The ones that that actually have a vested interest on a daily basis of how they do, but then allow the guys behind them or under them to actually execute the right. plan. So in this book, you're really honest about that. You're really honest also about your family life and growing up and a complicated relationship with your dad as well. How complicated was it, and how did that color your life?
When I say complicated, a lot of people are like, what? You and Stan didn't have a good relationship? I'm not talking about that. My father was always there for me. My father was always in my life. Wherever I live, my father always moved around the corner because obviously he and my mother went together, but he always stayed around the corner, walking distance. So he was always there. It just was a sports dynamic relationship. Like, it was, you know, I didn't get whoopings by him. I didn't get disciplined by him. I didn't get, you know, anything. Schoolwork was, go to your mom and handle the schoolwork, you know, whatever. But it was sports was our relationship. So for me, I always felt like I had to be great or good for our relationship to stay strong and stay intact. Like, if I'm running track, I got to win. I got to win. Like, if I'm playing football, my teammate, I got to win, but I got to go out there and catch some touchdowns. Baseball, I got to hit some home runs. So it was always this, you know, this subconscious pressure to do well, perform well, so that my father and I would have a good relationship. And I realized later on, looking back, it wasn't the case, but it just seemed that way. Like, some people don't know how to show love, but then if you ask them, they'll tell you, you know, you mean the world to them. So a lot of times, just don't assume as a kid. Like, just ask, hey, Dad, do you love me? Hey, how much do you love me? And they'll tell you, and then you don't have to, that weight is on, it's lifted. And I was like, oh, cool, I can go out there and suck. In that case, I can go be a cartoonist. Like, I really didn't want to play football anyway, no, so. But yeah, no, so yeah. Looking back, everything in perspective was great.
Really. Yeah. Braylon Edwards joins us here on the show. He's got a new book, Doing It My Way. And, you know, you are posed in front of Michigan Stadium, and you had incredible glory years at Michigan. You had incredibly, you know, productive years there. And right now, Michigan is looking at Ohio State. And we wonder, this has not been a great start to the season for Michigan. And nearly losing to Army at home should never happen. Do you worry about the program falling behind Ohio State and not being able to catch them?
Well, that falling, we fell. It's past tense. We're light years behind Ohio State right now. My biggest concern, if I'm being honest, is at Ohio State, and I know this from insight, friends of mine that are former Buckeyes, which sounds weird, but it's true, former Buckeyes, and then knowing Urban and talking to Urban at Big Ten Media Day a couple years in a row, I know the pressure, and I know the respect, and I know the, what's the word I'm really looking for, I know the emphasis that they put on that Michigan game. 365 days a year, they are breathing, living, hating. They can't even say our name. Like, they hate us so much. So when they go into that game, that's like the one day for the rest of our lives. It's kind of like that old school 1960s football where you're just Friday night lights in Texas. Like, that's kind of that atmosphere. And that's what they bring to the table when they play us. You can feel it on them. Like, you can almost smell the hate when you play against them. Now, from our point, I remember interviewing Jim Harbaugh, Coach Harbaugh, 2 years ago, and he said we approach it like any other game. And I looked at Brady Hoke. He had said something similar. And Rich Rod, it's not his fault. He didn't know what was going on in the Big Ten. So that's not the way you approach that game. And I know it's cliche to say, well, you know, you approach every team like you approach any other team. That's BS. Like, you approach certain teams differently. We got to start approaching that game from the standpoint that they do. Like, I feel like when we go in that game, you're looking at two different preparation systems. Like, you got one team that prepared really well through training camp. They prepare, you know, the week of to play that team. And they're ready to go out there and give it your all. You got another team that's been prepping for 365. Like, they have periods each day that's a Michigan period, no matter who they're playing. Like, if they're playing Wisconsin, it's going to be Wisconsin game plan. There's going to be a period where we focus on Michigan. There's things, meetings they have about Michigan. Like, they bleed and sweat that game. And I think it's allowed them to get the better of us with that mindset.
You consider Michigan light years behind Ohio State?
14-1, you tell me. 14-1 in that game. 14-1, and we're getting better at recruiting. We're getting some better talent up there at Michigan. Jim is bringing in the guys that can compete in that game. And you look and you say, well, you know, they were a fourth and inches away from, you know, 1 year, and then last year was, you know, pretty close as well, back and forth. But you look at 14-1, and that's the mindset of that area. Because it keeps being the same thing.
Well, and Ohio State's competing for national championships. They're in the college football playoff. They have won a title recently. They're consistently ranked in the top five or top ten. And Michigan kind of keeps striving to get there but can't. Do you think that's a Jim Harbaugh problem?
I don't know if it's necessarily Jim. Something has to happen with the recruiting. And 2 years ago, our recruiting, we were only like 19th. you know, and we should be better than that. So I don't know what it's going to take, but something's going to have to happen where a switch is flipped on or something is brought to the forefront. Like, what is the difference? Like, where is the disconnect? Because it was a couple years ago, we had, 17 players drafted, or, you know, we tired Alabama that one year, which were all hoax guys. But we're getting some good talent. You look at Mo Hurst, Rashawn Gary, you look at Devin Bush, is going to be an outstanding, phenomenal linebacker in his league. Jordan Lewis, I think he has a shot down there in Dallas. So he's recruiting guys, but there's just that next level down at Ohio State. Like, when you watch those games, like, I hate to keep talking positively about Ohio State, but if
you kills you inside to do that,
then it burns. I'm a Michigan guy. I believe maize and blue. But if you're watching, it's just the next level when you watch Ohio State game versus any other team in the Big Ten. Like, with the exception of one year, Penn State was ridiculously. It was 2 years ago with Saquon and Gesicki and McSorley. Like, you're just watching like different football. Like, they understand. Like, they don't stray away from what they do, and I think that could be an issue for other schools. Like, they change the guards. They try to have different quarterbacks. Well, 1 year we'll have a running quarterback. Maybe this year we'll have a more pocket passing type of quarterback. Well, maybe we'll feature three wides. Well, maybe we'll feature two wides. Well, maybe we'll feature the running. Ohio State is going to have a quarterback that can run and pass. They're not going to throw the ball post routes and big digs and things like that. They're going to throw quick screens, get their ball into the hands of quick guys out of Georgia, out of Florida, out of Texas, somewhere. Let them do all the work. Take the pressure off the quarterback. You're going to have big guys on left and right. And then on defense, you're going to have guys that are like Al Davis basically recruited this defense, because they're all going to be fast and move around and fly. That's been their motto since I was there, and it hasn't changed. Whether the guard has changed, that hasn't changed. That's been Ohio State football, and I think that's how you continue success. You can change some quarterbacks or some players and things of that nature, but if you have the same mindset and the same characteristics, you have success. Ohio State has had continued success, but they've had the same model in place. Am I wrong?
No, you're right.
Terrell Pryor, JT Barrett, Justin Fields. You keep going down that list. Braxton Miller. Very, very similar guys.
Got that right. Yeah. Braylon Edwards has a new book called Doing It My Way, My Outspoken Life as a Michigan Wolverine, NFL Receiver, and Beyond. It's a really cool read. Really opens up, I think, a lot of windows into the life of a professional athlete and a star athlete in college and how you handled everything, and you're really honest in it. So this is a really cool read. Check it out. It's available everywhere. Braylon Edwards, Doing It My Way. This was awesome, man. We got to do this again.
You let me know, man. I'll be here.
This was really, really cool. I appreciate
the
time.
No problem.
Yeah, come in anytime. Braylon Edwards, our guest this morning on the show. When we come back, the Bills get another victory in quote-unquote New York. What does it mean historically? You'll be surprised at this stat next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
It's the DA Show, only on CBS Sports Radio.
3rd and 8 at the Giants 48 with 3:42 to go. Manning back to throw again. Going to throw a deep ball down the middle of the field, and that ball is going to get intercepted by Jordan Poyer at about the 2-yard line. Manning just heaved it up there, hoping somebody would run under it, and it.
I think we got to look at how our team played, and we got to just go back and take steps to get better in all areas. I don't think that's a conversation for right now. I think we got to get everybody's got to play better.
Oh my. Pat Shurmur and the New York Giants. That was Giants Radio on the call. What another grotesque effort by Big Blue. Welcome back. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. Listen to us in podcast form. If you missed anything or want to hear it again, you can download full episodes of the DA Show by simply going to iTunes, radio.com, or other places that podcasts are available. So let's just start this. That the New York Giants are terrible. And this Giants team is trying to sell to its fan base and perhaps internally that Eli Manning should start this season, perhaps as a farewell swan song, but a proper send-off, because also the Giants can be competitive with a healthy Eli Manning instead of going already to the rookie Daniel Jones. As I said before the season, I will reiterate now. Laughter. This is not a team that was going to be competitive with or without Eli Manning. Eli, at his best, was not going to make this team a playoff caliber team. And the Giants ownership is likely sick of losing so much for so long. But the fact of the matter is, this roster's not good enough to win with Eli Manning even playing at his best. So this has always been this kind of silly, strange shell game where the Giants want to sell that they're going to be competitive, but only if Eli plays. And thus, because Eli is playing, he also gets the proper send-off. Well, we saw Daniel Jones pretty ready in the preseason to take over. That much was obvious. He looked pretty comfortable, pretty confident. Whether he is the real deal or not, who knows? I'm not going to put him into Canton like Mraz is already, but he seemed like he was at least ready for the stress and the expectations of being an NFL quarterback, what it takes. Now you're 0-2, and you played two dog food efforts. They were ugly against the Cowboys. They were ugly against the Bills yesterday. And now what are you going to sell? Daniel Jones looks ready to take over. Eli Manning is not playing well, and the team is awful. What are you going to sell at this point? It makes no sense any longer to be starting Eli Manning except for wanting to do right by Eli Manning, and that's not a good enough reason to continue to start Eli Manning. Now, on the flip side, the Buffalo Bills. The Bills come into yesterday and an iffy effort against the Jets last week, but they get a win on the road. And they come back to play the Giants in the same stadium 1 week later and get a win again. And this is a kind of terrifying, yet crazy, delirious stat. But apparently, every team that has ever beaten the Giants and Jets in back-to-back weeks has gone to the Super Bowl. Is that right, Mraz? Am I reading that right?
It's any team, and well, there's been four times in NFL history prior to yesterday.
Four different teams, now a fifth, but four different teams.
That played back-to-back road games at the same stadium, which would be at the Meadowlands, have all gone on to make the Super Bowl. I know one of them was one of the 90s Cowboy teams. They actually flashed on the screen yesterday. I'm looking for the exact tweet with all the teams that have ever done it. But if the Bills don't make the Super Bowl, they'd be the first team ever to not make the Super Bowl after doing
this. To play at New York, at the Giants, at the Jets in back-to-back weeks and win both games.
And win both games. Every team that's done that has only been four in NFL history have made the Super Bowl.
I got a feeling Buffalo's going to the Super Bowl. I got a feeling Buffalo's going to the Super Bowl. Four times in NFL history, a team has come into New York and beaten the Jets and Giants in back-to-back weeks. It's now happened a fifth time. The other four times, the teams have all made the Super Bowl. Wouldn't that be great that this Bills team defeats the undefeated Patriots in the divisional round of the playoffs, sends the Pats home and the Bills to an AFC championship game. When we come back here on the DA Show, we've got the story that did not make the cut. Pat Narduzzi, what are you doing? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Don't like something? Get it out.
Don't say, I always listen to my mother. I'm not listening to my mother. Told me to bring up the clothes that were folded downstairs to all the bedrooms. Guess who didn't do it? Me. Because I'm a man and I don't listen to my mother. I'm a man. You don't tell me to bring up clothes that were folded for other people in the house. No way. You let them sit on that couch. I don't have a guest book the rest of the week. How about I give her some numbers? You go book a guest, Mom. How about that?
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
43 minutes past the hour. We don't listen to our mothers around here. The DA Show, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, every single morning. And you can also watch us at watchda.com on any device, watchda.com. Our toll-free line brought to you by GEICO, 855-212-4227. Great news, quick way you could save money switching to GEICO. Go to geico.com and in 15 minutes you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Justin tweets, wow, amazing interview with Braylon Edwards. Did not go the way I was expecting. I'm officially on his train. Sounds like he could have a future in broadcasting or coaching. Certainly broadcasting, and he's done broadcasting work already. But yeah, that was really good from Braylon Edwards. I mean, really good. Really good thoughts on the Browns wreck that he was in the middle of, getting jumped by LeBron's friends, getting traded away to the Jets, dealing with the media criticism and the fans' criticism, calling out his Michigan Wolverines as, quote, light years behind Ohio State. And he is one of the most dynamic Wolverines playmakers ever. His thoughts on Antonio Brown, I mean, everything was really excellent. So if you missed that, I highly encourage you to check it out either on our podcast page, on the website, cbssportsradio.com. We'll tweet out links to all of that. Let's get to your Ask the Pros question of the day, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly for all of your car care needs. Guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Nate tweets, DA, will the Dolphins run the 0-16 table joining the Lions? You know, look, it's kind of impossible to say because you don't know who's going to lay down late in the season. I mean, for the Dolphins, it's distinctly possible they have a couple of games late in the year where teams take their foot off the gas. They feel like they can go three-quarter speed and still beat the Dolphins. Maybe they're banged up. Maybe they sit some guys getting ready for the playoffs and, you know, the Dolphins come up and bite them. It's always possible that the Dolphins have that local advantage where teams come in and they go partying in Miami the night before, or they're distracted by mamacitas all over the place in Miami, South Beach. They want to go out to the clubs and they're distracted by even going down there. And it's also possible at some point in time, Josh Rosen's going to get in. And Rosen yesterday, I get it that it was garbage time, but had a couple of decent deep passes that were just dropped. So I don't think it's guaranteed they'll run the table 0-16, but, I mean, look, by all intents and purposes, this is the worst team of the NFL by a long shot. By a long shot. And I'll tell you this, they will be an underdog in every single game significantly. Yesterday, they were 18.5 point home dogs. That never happens. In fact, we had R.J. White yesterday on Sunday Morning Football. We always have a Vegas virtuoso to break down the lines. He said, by his account, he could only find four other times in NFL history where a home team was more than an 18-point underdog. That's basically like being a three-touchdown underdog because on a neutral site, you know, you would give back 3 points. And all of the other times, the underdog covered the number. And yesterday, not only did the Patriots cover 18.5, they covered 43. So, you have that. You have that. All right, let's get to the stories that did not make the cut.
These stories were left out by the selection committee. Cut from their high school team. The news that didn't make the show. It's The Cut Line.
News came down during our show. As you've heard, Drew Brees will undergo thumb surgery as early as today that could sideline him about 6 weeks. He knew last night after he hit his hand on Aaron Donald's hand that he might have ligament damage and could need surgery. So they're deciding what to do, whether they'll consider placing Brees at injured reserve, which would free up a roster spot, but that would mean he would have to miss 8 total weeks. So right now, New Orleans goes to Teddy Bridgewater, and that's a scary proposition. Bridgewater is a veteran. Bridgewater's now been in the offense a couple of years, but Bridgewater ain't Drew Brees. Nobody is. And yesterday, Bridgewater didn't exactly light the world on fire when he got in there against the Rams. The Saints, you think about this, they were one of the favorites to win the Super Bowl, and now they take a big, big step backward in doing so because 6 weeks, 8 weeks without Drew Brees, even if you go 500 over 6 weeks, that's 3-3. That's already 4 losses on the season by the time you get Brees back. So luckily in their division, Cam Newton is clearly not 100%. The Falcons are the Falcons, and the Bucs aren't going to win the division. But for the Saints, this is obviously an enormous blow. And it'll take every little trick in Sean Payton's toolbox to get Teddy Bridgewater to be winning games behind this team.
So sorry, you've been cut.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Pat Narduzzi, shame on you. The Pitt head coach on Saturday at Penn State at Happy Valley is trailing by a touchdown, 17-10. They have been at the one-yard line and haven't been able to punch it in since first and goal. First and goal, second and goal, third and goal. So on fourth and goal, you've got about 5 minutes left in the game. You're trailing 17-10. You obviously go for it on fourth down, right? I mean, obviously. Because you either get the touchdown and tie it up, or even if you don't, you then have pinned Penn State on their own one-yard line, and you're down seven. So a field goal here does nothing for you. Because even when you get the ball back, if you get the ball back, you then still have to score a touchdown. You're down by four, even if you kick a field goal here. So you go for it, right? Well, Narduzzi doesn't. Narduzzi decides to try to kick the field goal, and they miss the field goal. So it's a total disaster in every single way, shape, and form. But it's also a ridiculous decision, and Narduzzi tried to defend it by saying, we needed two scores. No, that doesn't defend the decision. The decision is stupid. It's idiotic. You obviously try to punch it in there because you're down by a touchdown. You have to score a touchdown. The only way you can win this game by at some point scoring a touchdown. If you score the touchdown here, then you only have to score the field goal the next possession. But if you kick the field goal here, you still got to get down to this end zone. You're at the one. You won't have a better chance to get the touchdown than that. You go for the touchdown, and if you miss it, you've backed up Penn State on their own one. Every which way, it was stupid and ridiculous. And yes, I ranted about it yesterday on Sunday Morning Football, and I'll do it again because it was dopey.
So sorry, you've been cut.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Let's get to your epic fail of the morning, boys and girls. The Patriots are 2-0. They've added Antonio Brown to a cadre of weapons they did not already need him added to. And they have the gall to leak a report. Oh, if we knew about the sexual assault allegations, we would have never signed him. Really? You just started him. You started him. And the first drive had multiple passes thrown to him. So save us. Spare us. What happens if the Patriots are now 19-0 in season number 100 of the NFL? It's your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
If you think it's already done and the Patriots are winning, and that's already sickening, but also that it's the Patriots that are going to do
sure.
it yet again, does that make you question whether God is good?
What?
You know, that's a tough one for me.
Okay.
I have to say he's not at this point. I have to. I mean, how could you?
Well, I mean,
or at the very least, maybe God's not a sports fan.
Well,
do we have anybody ever think of that?
Absolutely.
Maybe God likes apple picking on a Sunday.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think God's got the Sunday ticket, because if he did, he'd figure something out for now.
A lot of good will come out of this.
How can this be fair in the ultimate scheme of things, that the Patriots are this good yet again for 20 years? They actually paid the one guy that killed two people.
God bless.
That all these terrible things that they've done, they could do and get away with and still be great. And this year, again, look like a runaway train. How can life in football be fair?
I love him.
Because it's not fair. You know what happens? God wakes up upstairs, makes a little egg scramble, takes the wife out, goes apple picking, comes home, watches whatever hit HBO show is on. He's done for the day. That's why. God's done for the day without turning on football for a damn second. There's no such thing as the sports gods. God's not a sports fan.
I beg your pardon. That's awful.
Do we think at some point, though, that Patriots fans and the Patriots organization itself is in for some type of karmic rude awakening, that something is going to end up being exposed, or some type of horrendous, awful loss? Like,
what could be exposed? They had an axe murderer on their team. I mean, what are we doing here? They cheated. They deflated footballs. They spied. They signed Antonio Brown, who might, you know, sexually harass a woman, assault, whatever. And nothing happens to them. What is going to be exposed here?
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
The
epic fail.
We are simultaneously living in the best sports era ever and the worst sports era ever. I mean, specifically the Patriots. If you could just wipe clean the Patriots, then every NFL season would be a real hoot. It really would be. It would be really quite a delightful dance of 20 weeks, but this kind of never-ending guillotine, this never-ending Grim Reaper of the Patriots just sucks so much joy out of it. Adam Schefter is reporting just moments ago, Ben Roethlisberger out for the season. Elbow injury, and he will undergo elbow surgery. So welcome, Mason Rudolph, to the rest of your life. The Pittsburgh Steelers are now 6-10, 5-11, and the Pittsburgh Steelers season is effectively over on week number two. Absolutely gruesome. We will break it all down tomorrow morning as part of Trash Tuesday and what happens tonight between Browns and Jets. That's what I'm talking about. NFL season will be great without the Patriots. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer. Pete the Bottom Alotti, good to have you back on the Wheels of Steel. Sam Rubinoff on your simulcast, Andrew Bogish on your headlines. I'm DA, the Mothership Disconnects.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.